In our first reading today, we pick up the story of King Saul, who is the first king of Israel, and the future King David. David is a younger man at this time. Saul is still the king, but of course David has had that incredible victory against Goliath and has had great military success in Saul's army, and so people are giving David all kinds of accolades. And in our typical human weakness, Saul, rather than rejoicing that his armies are winning and he has this incredible warrior in David, Saul becomes jealous. In fact, he becomes so jealous that he actually starts pursuing David to kill him, simply because David is beloved by the people and has in fact been chosen by God to become king after Saul. So David, who had enjoyed the favor of King Saul, is now fleeing through the wilderness and hiding in caves. And Saul is pursuing him with his army. That's where we come in our story today, when Saul and his army are encamped and are asleep. And we find that God has, in fact, cast a deep sleep on them and has delivered Saul and his army into the hands of David. And so David and his attendant are able to walk right into the camp of Saul and see that his spear is right at his head. And the attendant says, well, this is it. God has blessed you, David. He's delivered your enemy right into your hands. I'll take this spear and I'll nail him to the ground with it and we'll be done. And you won't have to be pursued to the desert anymore. And behind all that is, of course, and then you'll be king. It could all happen so easily right there. But David says that he will not do that. Even though it's all right there in front of him, it would be perfectly easy to take. It might even be able to be rationalized. It seems like God has allowed this. David says he will not harm the Lord's anointed, the king. And so instead, he takes the spear. They go off to a distant hill. And then they wake up Saul and his entourage. And from a distance, David shows him the spear. It says, see, I was right by your head with your spear while you were asleep. I could have killed you, and I didn't. This is David saying to Saul, do you see I am not a threat to you? Why are you pursuing me like a little bug through the wilderness? You who are the great king of Israel. What have I ever done to you? I haven't done anything to you. You see now that if I were your enemy, if I wanted to kill you, I could have just done it, and I didn't. Do you see that I am not your enemy? It's a great kind of vision for us to imagine. I thought of that in light of some of our Native American history of this area. It reminded me very much of the Native American practice of what is known as counting coup, C-O-U-P. Of course, there were many battles that the Plains Indians would fight amongst themselves in different tribes. And in fact, one could gain fame through victory in battle. But amongst the Native Americans and the Plains tribes especially, they had the tradition that the most glorious thing you could do in battle would be able to come in contact with your enemy, have the opportunity to kill him, and instead take something like a stick, a coup stick, as it would have been known, and simply tap him on the shoulder with your stick and then ride away unharmed. As if to say, see, I am so powerful that I was right there. I could have killed you, and I didn't. And the reward for having counted coup, as it were, on your enemy was that you would often be rewarded an eagle feather. So you see Native Americans with a large bunch of eagle feathers that they would be wearing. Those are coup feathers, feathers that they would have earned in battle, not by killing their enemy, but by sparing their enemy, showing that not only am I powerful enough to kill you, I'm actually more powerful than you because I could have killed you and didn't. That was the highest honor that one could achieve in battle, to count coup on your enemy. Thought about both of those kind of situations then in light of what Jesus is telling us and in light of our Christian faith. How necessary this kind of understanding is today, where we see so much hurt, so many people who have really legitimately been hurt by other people. We take our friendships very lightly these days, and even our families get into great trials and quarrels, and it's so easy to end up mad at your friends, mad at your family, mad at the world. I'm a canon lawyer, so as a lawyer, I can at least say that, well, we like suing people a lot. Anything goes wrong, well, we're going to take people to court. We're going to get police involved, and we're going to prove that I've been victimized. And I'm going to get what I've got coming, and I'm going to get back at the people that hurt me, as if by spreading more hurt, we could cure the original hurt. It's not how it works. Ultimately, we know that hurt people hurt people, but it just cycles and cycles into this perpetual hurting others, failing to forgive, wanting to get even, feeling victimized, so feeling entitled to victimize others. This is not the kind of life that Jesus intends for his disciples, and it's not what the kingdom of God looks like. Sadly, if it is true that our world looks a bit like this today. So what's the solution to that? Well, someone has to be the one to break the cycle, to say, yes, I've been wronged. Yes, I've been hurt unjustly, like David pursued for the wilderness for no reason. Why does Saul keep pursuing him? It's ridiculous. Leave David alone. Just let him go. But Saul won't do it. All of us, I think, have the opportunity in life to say, I choose to break the cycle. I am not going to retaliate. Yes, I've been victimized. Yes, I've been hurt unjustly. Yes, injustice, I could lash out and demand what's mine, and I choose not to. I choose then to show not justice, but mercy. I'm going to give this person not what they deserve, justice, but the mercy that they don't deserve, knowing that we want God to be merciful with us who don't deserve mercy. We deserve God's justice, but we want to be measured by that measure, to be merciful, to know that if I choose to break the cycle of repeated hurt, then that's how God ultimately works. Why does Jesus want to die on the cross to take away the sins of the world? This breaks the cycle. Jesus, when he's taunted to come down from the cross, of course he could have. I mean, at any time, Jesus could have just, you know, winked his eye and vanquished the entire Roman army right in front of him. I mean, he could have just called down fire from heaven right away. Jesus, of anybody, completely innocent, completely unjustly condemned and hurt, if he had wanted to, he could have just wiped everybody out. But he chooses rather the path of mercy, the path that breaks the repeated cycle of more and more sin and hurt. We're called to be merciful then, as God is merciful, we're told in the scriptures. Now we might think that, well, that's weakness. That's, you know, us allowing ourselves to be taken advantage of. Like, if I get hit and I'm supposed to turn the other cheek, or if someone steals from me, I'm supposed to let it go. Well, we have a choice. In justice, sure, we could continue to lash out and continue to pursue. But, you know, I've often found that, especially when a deep injustice is done to us, no amount of trying to restore justice ever really satisfies. Because although you could try to get even, you can sue people, you can try to get money, you can do whatever to try to get even, it never takes away the hurt. You're still hurt. And as much as we can hope for justice, it doesn't ever really come in this life. And now there's the secret as to why you and I can be merciful, why instead of taking it out on others, we can count coup, as it were, because we know that this life is not all there is. Think about a concrete way that the resurrection from the dead really actually influences our life every day. Well, this is it, to be able to be merciful. If there's no life after death, if there's no reward in heaven, then darn right I got to get even in this life. If this life is all there is, then all there is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Because if someone wrongs me, not only do I got to wrong them back, but I got to get more. Because this life is all there is. But if there's heaven, if there's life after death where there really is a reward, well, then we don't have to get even in this life. And in fact, we become more godlike the more we don't try to get even. The more we stand aside on the cliff and say, look, here's the spear. I could have gone after you. I could have tried to make your life miserable. I could have gotten even. I choose not to. I choose mercy. Now, sometimes that will result in the person taking advantage of more people, and it won't have the effect we intended. But sometimes that experience of mercy, someone having mercy on you, well, that causes you then to be merciful. And it might just start a chain reaction of people forgiving, being merciful, rather than this chain reaction of getting even and spiraling down. One act of mercy might just lift everybody else up. I think about the beautiful classic story of Les Miserables, the French novel, where Jean Valjean has been convicted for stealing a loaf of bread to feed his hungry sister. And finally, he gets out of prison and he's just trying to get some food, and he betrays a holy bishop who, you know, took him in. And the bishop, rather than handing him over to the authorities and ruining his life again and sending him back to prison, all which would have been just, the bishop has mercy on Jean Valjean, and it changes his whole life. He now becomes one of the greatest agents of mercy we've ever seen in literary history. And that's not just a fairy tale then that exists in novels and plays. That's what God really wants. He wants that to be played out in our lives. One act of mercy might just be the thing that changes the world. So today, in that light, it makes more sense for God to say, yeah, if someone takes, don't spend all your energy trying to get it back and fight and get angry. So what? So what if you get it back? You still wasted all that time being mad and angry. What if you just said, hey, everything I got comes from God, you know, we'll let that go. We'll be merciful. Ultimately, it detaches us from the things of this world. Not just the material things, but even the desire to get even in this world, knowing that there's a better world to come. So today, you might ask yourself, all right, where are the times in your life that you've experienced mercy? And then what is your response to that? Are you trapped in some kind of cycle that's, let's get even? I can't let this grudge go. I haven't talked to this family member in forever because of something they did to you way back when. Whatever it is, where are you trapped in this cycle of downward, getting even? Where are you called to show mercy? And if we're looking for something to start the cycle for us, yeah, there it is. Jesus, that's the greatest act of mercy there ever was. That should start the cycle for us. We know the great mercy God has for us. That's the measure by which we want to be measured. That Jesus would lay down his life for us in mercy. I want that measure, not justice. I want mercy. So today, how can you be merciful? In the end, a little counting coup not only will bring you greater honor in heaven, but you'll be happier in this life too, as you spiral in the beautiful direction of love rather than revenge.